is known for his rich and entrancing concerts of Rumi, the 13th century Persian mystic poet. He was born to a Persian Jewish family in Iran and migrated to the U.S. at the age of 16. Since 1988, Shahram has translated several hundred of Rumi's poems collected in four books and continues to translate and perform his work on an ongoing basis. His translations of original Rumi poems have also been utilized by Western Rumi interpreters such as Andrew Harvey and Jonathan Starr and have been printed in numerous other publications. Shahram has devised a new breakthrough method in teaching the whirling movement, where he has been conducting large-scale workshops since 1995. This method, featured on CNN, is now being taught by a few of Shahram Shiva's whirling students, including Deepak Chopra. Along with his books of Rumi poetry, which include Hush, Don't Say Anything to God, Passionate Poems of Rumi, and Rending the Veil, Literal and Poetic Translations of Rumi, Shahram has released the CD Love Drunk, which we've been hearing music from just now. The groundbreaking new audio project incorporates more than a dozen talented musicians from Persia, Europe, Latin America, and the United States. Shahram performs regularly with various musicians, which include Rich Goodhart, John Ragusa, Steve Gorn, and many others. You can check out his website for the schedule, and it is rumi.net, R-U-M-I.net, and it's my great pleasure to introduce to you, who has been a guest on our program several times, I'm very happy about it, Shahram Shiva. Hello, Shahram.
Hello, it's great to be on your show again, Gary.
And isn't it something, it just happened that way that you followed Hudos.
And yeah, it's terrific.
And so it makes it for a very exciting program here. You having performed with Hudos a number of occasions, correct?
I think once. We did, there was a Kripalu in 2007 had the a Rumi festival in celebration of Rumi's 800th birthday. And there was an evening performance where Hudos was there, Steve Gorn was there, John Decott, myself, Linda Wooster, my favorite lady, and Alex Gray was doing a live simultaneous painting, and I think maybe other things that I can't think of. Oh, there were some whirlers on stage. It was quite a show.
And Steve, did you mention Steve Gorn too?
I think I did. Yeah, yeah. And the master band three player Steve Gorn.
Yes. Thank you. You know, he was in our studio live a few weeks back.
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah, so it's great.
You know, Rich Goodhart and I, Rich is my main musical collaborator, are trying to organize a concert in Woodstock, which is that's the area that Steve Gorn lives with Steve Gorn. We were hoping to do it this fall. I'm not sure whether we can do it, but I very much like for that to happen. It would be basically the trio of Rich, myself, and Steve Gorn. In Woodstock, New York. So, of course, if we can make it work this fall, I will definitely let you know. But if not, we'll probably do it for next spring.
What have you been up to these days, Shahram?
I have, as far as Rumi is concerned, I haven't actually been doing too much. I've been doing with other things. I tend to do a lot of different things, and Rumi, of course, has been a very constant in my life for 20 years. And will be for the foreseeable future. But I have just other kind of non-Rumi related stuff. But I was at Kripalu with Rich Goodhart and John Ragusa a couple of months ago, and I think we did a program just before then on your show.
That's right.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Yeah, and how about the UN? Did you perform at the UN?
Yes, you're right. I did the UN event. It was lovely and chaotic at the same time. It seems to be the case, and kind of, you know, I want to be as politically correct as possible, but it really makes you wonder how anything gets done there, because this is my second event, and it's always very disorganized and chaotic, and it's when the event is going on, it's fantastic, and the response from the crowd is really, truly amazing. I mean, I received, I don't know, almost every person who was there sent me an email afterwards, something I had not experienced before. But there is just something about the, and I say that with a lot of respect, and love for that universal institution. There's something about the UN that is their bureaucratic system in the past 50 years or so has become a little bit, just too complex.
Yeah, a little bit complex, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I had had the pleasure to host an event at a hotel across the street from the United Nations for a group. That was a unique experience for me.
I think it goes with the territory, considering the size of the institution and so forth. I'm actually doing another. They have a gala fundraiser in October, and they have asked me to kind of set the tone in the very beginning. And this is something that I'm actually very much looking forward to it. Basically, they want, it's going to be like a 4-minute or 5-minute, just more of an invocation to set the tone for that gala event. I did something very similar for New York Open Center's gala fundraiser, where I did some Rumi and a bit of whirling, and that kind of set the stage for the evening.
Yes. Do you have any of your poetry with you right now?
Yes, I do.
I think it would be lovely for you to read some of it.
You know, you have asked me that in the past, and I've always refused because I always come defer to you. But today I will not do that.
Well, I do like to read poetry, and I've enjoyed reading your books in the past on the air, but you are the master reader, in fact.
Well, listen, I very much appreciate that. You know, the way that I see it is it's just my way of thinking is I have the privilege of doing these things in public and have been doing them, you know, for many, many years. And why not have other people do? And why do I need to kind of have the spotlight? That is my view of it.
Oh, so, I understand that. Yeah. It's a great idea. And I really appreciate it. But I think for the sake of our listeners today and in the spirit, since you haven't been reading it on other times as much as, it's nice to do that from time to time.
Yeah. So, I just opened my book, Hush. The title of the book, the full title is Hush, Don't Say Anything to God, Passionate Poems of Rumi. It's been in print for now 10 years, and I thank the publishers for keeping it in print. That's really, it's very nice of them to do that. They're actually quite nice. They're out of California. It's called Jane Publishing. And the book does very steady. Every year sells a few hundred units, so it keeps everybody happy. And it's been in print for a long time. But all the poems that I do in my performances and every single lyric that's on a Rumi Love Drunk CD, everything comes from the Hush book, just for people to know. I also have my whirling instructions at the back of the Hush book.
Well, that's great.
So, yeah, it's a special. But anyway, so I open to page 43. And here's a very typical, fantastic quatrain of Rumi, a short poem. Last night, my lover came. He must have been in a kind mood to finally show up. I asked the night not to reveal my secret. Night said, "Who do you think you're fooling? You own the sun. You own the daylight. Can I even appear in the morning to tell anyone about this?" It's typical because it again involves a dialogue. Rumi has so many duets. He talks with love as if love has taken a physical form in front of him. He talks with sorrow. He talks with the beloved, obviously, numerous times. He has conversations with Shams. He has conversations with sages, peers, which is a Middle Eastern term, a Persian term for a master, and so forth. And let me read the one right next to it, page 42.
Yeah.
I am in love. I am in love with him. All this advice, what's the use? I have drunk poison. All this sugar, what's the use? You say, Harry, tie up his feet. But it's my heart that's gone crazy. All this rope around my feet, what's the use?
Beautiful.
Do you want to read one or two? You probably have something there, right?
Well, no, I want you to read today.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, this is...
You know, and we can play selections from your CD, Love Drunk, as well.
Sure, sure. Or we can also talk about things that we can... you know, 2008 is the 20th anniversary of me getting into Rumi and connecting with Rumi, translating Rumi and so forth. I rediscovered Rumi in 1988. I was 26 at the time, and although I, of course, knew of Rumi and other great Persian poets when I was being brought up, because it's just very much a part of the culture, you can't avoid them. This is like learning about Shakespeare. Everybody knows who Shakespeare is. They may not know a lot about him, but they have heard of the name or know some aspect of Shakespeare's work.
Right.
So we all know about our great Persian poets. But it wasn't until I was 26 where I really felt a very deep connection to Rumi, and that was based on some music that I was listening to, where a Persian classical singer, where I was singing Rumi and so forth. And I've talked about this on your show.
Yeah.
I think it's on my Rumi.net website as well.
Yes.
So, you know, 20 years of working with Rumi and 20 years of talking Rumi and 20 years of sharing Rumi. And if somebody would ask me, you know, so how has this affected you? You know, what have you learned about it? I think the thing that I have learned about Rumi is to be self-reliant, to be a free thinker, to be fearless, to try to figure things out for myself and not to follow cliché, or what I should say, cliché teachings. Although Rumi, you know, I think he's the main the main image of Rumi in the West is of his love poems, but I think people always gravitate toward Rumi because of his density and because of his depth. And the depth of Rumi is about the fact that he was such a maverick. You know, he was anti-big religion, and although he technically falls in the traditional Sufi doctrine of the mystical Islam, he was much, much ahead of that. And he was a lot freer than that. So, it's the idea of the fact that, you know, since we are born, we are, in a sense, being molded. The better phrase for it is brainwashed, but really molded into becoming a certain person. That happens through parenting. That happens through peer pressure. Happens through schooling. It happens through cultural pressures, social norms, and obviously working for corporations, and of course media puts a lot of pressure on us, and they kind of mold us, whether we know it or not. And working with somebody like Rumi, who was above and beyond all this, it makes you look at everything very, very objectively, and kind of get the trick behind every message. And it's almost like you are dissecting the code, and you can break it down, and then you can kind of free yourself from it. Like one of the very things that are quite cliche in spirituality is that they tell you can't take it with you. Right? How cliche is that? I mean, this is a very, very common theme of spirituality and religion, is you can't take it with you. Whereas that is 100% inaccurate. You take everything with you. You take the essence of your experiences, you take the essence of your relationships, you take the essence of everything you have felt, smelled, tasted, you take the essence of your own discoveries, the wisdom that you have gained, you take the essence of your wealth, of your prosperity, the way people treated you due to those, you know, privileges that you may have had. Every single thing that you have experienced, physical, mental, spiritual, and otherwise, you take with you. And that becomes a part of your, what I call soul evolution. So that's just one of a very common spirituality cliches that through Rumi I have learned to kind of decode and free myself from.
Yes, so Rumi's poetry can help you to enter into a kind of spirituality about who you are.
Yeah, Rumi is more than just a poet, and I've been saying that for a very long time. People know it already. You know, I mean, you don't become this popular in the West just because you talk about love, because there's obviously no shortage of love, you know, literally works. Rumi, he has the power to transform you. He has the power to elevate you. He has the power to really push you forward. And I think one of the comments that I have received about my CD is that people say that if you listen to the CD, you know, intensely, really paying attention to it, that it has the power to elevate you. I mean, if you go to my MySpace page, there are so many comments from people, and all of them kind of reading very similar. And that could not, you know, that could not make me any happier, because that's really that's the aim of my work with Rumi. Of course, entertainment is always a factor. You have to always wrap things in an entertaining way, otherwise you won't really be able to reach people. But I think the ultimate really mission of my work with Rumi is to be able to touch people, because I have been touched by Rumi, and I feel like I have been elevated.
You've been touched and you've been elevated. Well, it comes through in your poetry and in the music. And this is a very, very special CD, Love Drunk. You've been on. We've talked about this before. We've played this CD a number of times. It's very unique. Why, in your opinion, why is this recording so unique?
I think the recording is unique because we made it with no concept of commercial kind of success. We made it using a completely clean, I mean, I know now I'm using a cliche phrase. We used a clean sheet of paper. We didn't follow any currently established genres. We actually launched a new genre of spoken word songs, which doesn't really exist except for the city. And really, as far as, and I've said this many times to Gary on your show, my producer for the CD, Olivier Glisson, gets the nod for it, because he did something that was very special. You know, he lived with his musicians for a couple of months as they were doing all the music. He recorded a lot of music from the musicians. We had Persian musicians who had come to perform with him. Of course, we had musicians from all over, but the main tracks are driven by Persian instrumentations. And then he broke everything down and, like a painter, used them as color pigments and used the technology of a digital recording to put them together the way he thought they should be put together. So it was quite a process. It took about 3 years, and I think Olivier was very sensitive to my message. He was very sensitive to the cadence and the tone of my voice, and he built everything around kind of it's almost like a setting for a jewel where you make the ring as beautiful as you can, so that but not too beautiful that it would take away from the ring, you know, from the main stone itself. So that's what occurred. And you know, I have been trying for the past, and it's your program, it's a great program to talk about this. About for the past year, I'm actually kind of out there looking for a new producer to do a new CD with, and I haven't been very successful. I'm not sure exactly what I want to do. I don't have any clear ideas, but I don't want to duplicate Love Drunk. I just wanted the CD to remain as is, but I want to make something a little bit more accessible, because we already have Love Drunk. I probably want to do something a little bit more lounge, and we'll see. But I am looking for a new producer. So if somebody's hearing this and they want to work with me, I would love to hear from you.
Well, that's pretty exciting, Shahram, that we could hear some more from you in terms of the CD. That this is a, you know, this is to me, it's a, it's like a classic. It's so beautiful.
Thank you,
and
thank you.
And I love hearing it, and it's always a pleasure to be playing it on In the Spirit, and especially when you're guesting here on the program. I'd like to play another selection. We began the top of the hour with Love Said to Me and Love Drunk, the title of the CD. I'd like to go play A Time for Madness. Would you like to say anything about it before I put it on? Or
no, A Time for Madness was, I think, the last, either, I think it was the last piece that we put together for the CD. I co-produced the CD, so I spent a lot of time with Olivier with this. I mean, I was there all the time, you know, in the studio and so forth. And when it got to A Time for Madness, we were getting to be quite professional, and you know, like very quick and kind of the creating the sound and so forth. And I've done some of the percussion actually on a few of the tracks, and the main tone of the percussion A Time for Madness, I think it was something that I improvised on his studio desk, where then we recreated it professionally.
Okay, well, this is great, and thank you very much. We're going to hear it right now. We're after this station ID. We have Shahram Sheba on In the Spirit. Rumi.net is his website, and we'll be right back, and we're going to be playing A Time for Madness from a CD, Love Drunk. Thank you for being with us today on In the Spirit.
The best hospitals in the world aren't necessarily the ones that charge the most. In fact, Shriners Hospitals for Children have never charged for any of the medical care or services they provide, and they're recognized the world over as among the very best when it comes to helping kids with problems of the bones, joints, or muscles, or with severe burns. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. Call 1-800-237-5055 for more information.
From Bennington to Broad Albin, and from Catskill to Corinth, we're everywhere. This is 91.5 WRPI Troy.
Once more, love is pouring down my ceiling and my walls. Once more, it is the night of the full moon. It is time for madness. All my immense knowledge cannot help me now. Insomnia took my patience. Rain washed away my intellect. The lover made me lose my profession. What good is my work, anyway? Once more, rise, rise, rise. Once more, rise, rise, rise. Once more, rise, rise, rise. Like the way a garden burns in 100 shades of orange in the fall, a lover's heart shrivels for a sense of the beloved's touch. Now the face of that charred garden is my field of flowers. Look, 200 Jupiters are dancing around my moon. My love business is booming, but don't credit the consultants. I am done with the consultants and the pundits. They call you Jafar the imposter, but little do they know. Little do they know that you are my sham. That you are my sham. The flyer. Once more, rise, rise, rise. Once more, rise, 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 rise.
Thank you so much, Sharam. This is a beautiful selection.
Thank you very much, Gary. Really, it's always good to be on your show.
Yeah, and it's always refreshing to have to talk with you and play your music as well. And would you follow this up with some poetry recitation?
Sure, of course. This would be from page 48. Rumi says, there is a certain love that is formed out of the elixir of the East. Let me read it one more time. There is a certain love that is formed out of the elixir of the East. There is a certain cloud impregnated with 1,000 lightnings. There is my body, in it an ocean, formed of his glory. All the creation, all the universes, all the galaxies, are lost in it. This man had some extremely profound experiences, and he was lucky enough that he didn't need to report to a benefactor or a sponsor, because he was very wealthy himself. So he could basically do whatever he wanted. He could write down and speak whatever he wanted to say without any filtration, you know, without any censorship. And that is actually one of, obviously, many, many reasons why his poetry is so intense, is because he didn't have to report to anyone. I am an atom. You are like the continents of the sun for me. I am a patient of love. You are like medicine for me. Without wings, without feathers, I fly about looking for you. I have become a rose petal, and you are like the wind for me. Take me for a ride.
This you can't make this up. This has to be coming from the inside out.
Well, yeah, these are autobiographical because he didn't write them. He spoke them, and you know, obviously, he didn't write them down because he was illiterate. And there's a case about the Islamic prophet who was illiterate and he had to speak. But this is not the case. He was actually a quite brilliant college or a university professor, basically. But he didn't write because he would get enraptured and he would just start speaking these poems, and these are not free verse poems. Of course, we do them in English like that. They're very complex, and they have rhyme scheme, and very, you know, there's a structure you have to follow, and so forth. But he would just compose them just on the spot, and he would speak them. So what he's speaking is exactly what he's feeling. And there was always somebody there, possibly, you know, many times groups and musicians and so forth. Like I said, he was lived a very, very, very privileged life. It's not normal for, you know, creative types to have a life of extreme privilege and extreme, you know, financial advantage and political power and things like that. Rumi had all that.
Well, you know, yeah, I get this vision that he's that this poetry is coming out of him. These words are coming out of him, and the, you know, people are entranced by him. They're following and writing down, and I, during that time, were, I mean, since they had his poetry written down from, you know, from his ecstasies, did they, were they reading his poetry to others? Is that
He was there. He was extremely famous while he was alive.
So
he became an instant hit, basically. And he was, I know that we've talked about this on your show. You know, when you go back to that era, you're about 800 years ago, and you're in the Middle East. The West, which was Europe, was in the Dark Ages. You know,
yes.
there was disease and there was superstition, and the Catholic Church was really running the show in an extremely evil, negative way. So you have this, the West that was dormant, and whereas the East, including China, Japan, and Arabia, and of course Persia, and so forth, and they were really thriving with culture, literature, with medicine, with sciences, with mathematics and inventions and so forth. So, however, the people who were the most famous were kings only if they had done something really spectacular. Prophets, but there are only one or two or three prophets really out there. They're not, you know, obviously there are only a handful of them of all faiths when you think about it. And poets.
Yeah.
You know, there were no famous singers, no famous musicians, no famous dancers, no famous painters, no famous sculptors. What else can I tell you that?
Well, how about musicians?
No, there were no famous musicians. Unfortunately, they are famed musicians. They're known musicians to people who really go out there and research them. But none of them are household names.
Well, how about some of the people that followed Rumi? Did they? I can imagine them with their instruments and playing and dancing and singing to Rumi, right?
Yeah, but they were not. So only yes, they were doing their musician. There are all these stories about Rumi, you know, constantly composing, like almost nonstop, these poems one after another. And he has supposedly his best friend writing them down. That's highly inaccurate. I'm sure there were a group of people writing them. One guy cannot keep up writing all that. But even for one night, however, people. The one thing Rumi didn't have a problem was popularity. He used to teach classes of 400. So, but as far as talking about historical, you know, references now, the poets were it. They were the absolute most popular, most famous, most coded, most tapped into artists at the time. And that would be the same as, let's say, making a major Hollywood movie where you can really reach the most number of people simultaneously at the same time. So, and they were, you know, and I've said this many times, they were the rock stars of their time. Although the term rock star today doesn't have as much cliche as it did back in the 70s and 80s. I don't know what term can be used. Maybe movie stars, you know, somebody really famous movie stars. But that's what these people were. They were extremely popular. So about 1,000, this is just to answer your question, because you asked a very specific question. While he was alive, while he was composing this poetry, that was quite avant-garde for his time.
It was, but him being a scholar, wasn't there a lot of, wasn't poetry part of the culture?
Poetry was part of culture, but this is very new poetry. There is, you know, this was poetry that all of a sudden was elevated from the level of folk poetry, which is about the horse and the fields and the deer and kind of going hunting for deer or just cooing after your, you know, the young girl in the village. So what is the foundation of these poetry? The foundation of these poetry are basically folk expressions. However, what people like Rumi did, and they elevated this art form from a folk level to a masterful level. This is like somebody taking, here's a good example. They're not directly related, but it's a good example. It's like, you know, Bach taking a folk music or recitative Renaissance music, the Renaissance music that existed before him, and he would reinvent it into a new, very high art form that would give birth then to Beethoven and Mozart. So, yes, there was poetry before, but it was not at elevated state, and certainly did not investigate the psyche and the spiritual process to the extent that Rumi did. And this set a precedence where it was, like I said, his style was being copied. He was a hot new talent. He was known in all that area. He was in an area that later on became Turkey. So he was Persian, but did they migrate to an area later on becomes Turkey. But India was about 1,000 miles away or so. He was being copied while he was alive in India.
How about Hafez? When did he come around?
Hafez was at the tail end of this particular movement. Rumi was at the beginning of this particular movement. And Hafez, he's the most successful of the Persian classical poets. He is the most celebrated. And people say, what? Rumi's not? To be very honest, no. Rumi is elitist, and he's too mystical and spiritual for the common people, although they know him. But Hafez, he's the word meister of Persia. His book is in every household, and he's very embellished and very flowery, and he has a masterful grasp of the language, which is shocking. This guy was the real deal. Rumi was this powerhouse where he used poetry, whether he had a choice or not, as a form of expression. Hafez was a bona fide, massive poetic talent who came at the tail end on a genre that was already quite established.
Yes. Well, I'd like to play another selection from your CD, Love Drunk, if I may.
Go. Absolutely. Go right for it.
Gathering of Lovers.
Yeah, well, this is actually, maybe I just talk about it for about 30 seconds.
Yes.
Gathering of Lovers is the song that started this CD project.
Yes.
This is the only song on the CD that's not produced by Olivier Glisson. This was done by another producer, and I'm extremely sorry because his name escapes me. It is a proper song. It's not a spoken word song. It's an actual tune. It's a world music tune. And it has my partner for the CD, Michael Harrison, playing the harmonium and also singing Raga style. And the percussion on this CD is also by R.A. Fish. He is a New England-based percussionist who doesn't appear on, you know, anywhere else on the CD. So this particular tune is very different. However, it does have the same Ney player, whose name is Reza Derakhshani, who then we bring in to work on the rest of the CD. Very, very interesting tune. It's quite unusual, and I hope your listeners enjoy it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Shahram. Shahram Sheeb, our guest today on In the Spirit. His website is rumi.net.
Na ho, Shmendi, ho, Shad.
This is our gathering of lovers. This is our gathering of lovers. This is our gathering.
رائیو شیخیو مریدی نبود رائیو شیخیو مریدی نبود قلاشیو کمزنیو رندی باشد
This gathering is more like a drunken party A caravan of fools, tricksters and This gathering is more like a drunken party, a caravan of fools, tricksters, and madmen. This is a gathering of lovers. This is a gathering of lovers.
در عشق نه پستی نه بلندی باشد نی بیهوشی نه هوشمندی باشد قرائی و شیخی و مریدی نبود قلاشی و کمزنی و رندی باشد در عشق نه پستی نه بلندی باشد نی بیخوشی نه هوشمندی باشد قرائی و شیخی و مریدی نبود قلاشی و کمزنی و رندی باشد
This is a gathering of lovers, and that's a beautiful, beautiful song. Thank you, Sharam.
No, thank you very much.
Very beautiful, very beautiful. And from Love Drunk, what a beautiful song that is. And I love this music, and it's great. It's very special. I want to thank you for being with us, Sharam. I want to close with another selection of something we haven't heard yet. Would you like to make a selection?
Yeah, I think we should close with Lover Me.
Yes, okay.
Because Lover Me also has a very, very interesting ending as well.
Why don't we give us a couple seconds, a few seconds, tell us about Lover Me.
A very unusual poem of Rumi. It's probably, this may be the only one that is constructed in this. There may be one more. Out of 8,000 or 9,000 poems, this is really the only one or the only one of two that are constructed in this way by Rumi, where he's being extremely rhythmic and choppy and minimal. The Persian goes like this, Yar mero, qar mero, ishq jigar khar mero. یار توی قار توی خاج نگه دار منو. It's so rhythmic, you can actually dance to just the words alone. And when I did a translation for this, I wanted to honor the Persian and not just do a free verse translation of it. So what I did was the translation reads like this, a line or two reads like this: lover me, cave me, the sweet burn of love me, lover you, cave you, Shams protect me. So that's the basis for this poem.
Thank you. I want to thank you so much again in for being with on our program in the spirit. Sharam Shiva, everybody, we're very happy to have him on. Sharam from New York City. And thank you. Any closing words before we play this?
Just to thank you, really. I mean, you are a terrific, terrific person. Obviously, we've met several times in person. You are an amazing soul. You're always, you know, I admire and I cherish your support of my work and also for what you're doing on your program on Thursdays. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sharam, for your acknowledgement. And if you'd like to stay on the line, I'll speak with you shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
try to help rather than make my life more difficult. Oh, all these words of mine.